Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
Hey, I'm Andrew Horowitz.
Hey, you're back. You're back from vacation.
Hola, ¿cómo está? Yep, I took a few days off and went down to Costa Rica for an absolute adventure of a lifetime. Amazing. Have you been down there?
No. It just seems like a touristy place to me.
Well, there's some place. I mean, I went to I didn't go to San Jose. We flew into a different airport and then drove about 3 hours to this volcano area, which has, I mean, I was rappelling down 250-foot cliffs and ziplining across the rainforest and bathing in hot volcanic water. Very cool.
You were having the time of your life.
I go with my son every year for my birthday around there for a few days, because I have the I have a perpetual Cats in the Cradle song in my head.
God.
You know what I mean?
No, I don't.
You don't? All right, well, you know.
So so we have a new website, or at least the design has been updated.
Yeah, we got to do a shout out and a big thank you to, you ready for this? Nick the Rat from Brooklyn.
Nick's a talented guy.
Yeah, Nick.
I didn't know he did websites that looked that kind of, it's very contemporary looking.
Yeah. Do you know Nick?
Yeah, he's one of our top artists on the No Agenda show.
Oh, there you go. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I had a feeling with a name like Nick the Rat, he was probably from your side of the equation. You know?
He calls himself Nick the Rat. I have no idea why.
Anyway, well, it's really nice because basically right now, if you look at the site, you have some of the markets scrolling along. We have pricing of various markets around the world that's, you know, kind of live going along. We have links to our Twitter and our companies and weekly stock picks and how to subscribe to it. And we'll put a few more things on here, but it's really easy to navigate, and it looks a lot better than that old pathetic thing that we had.
Yeah, what we had, to be honest about it, was just the default template from WordPress.
Yeah, from like 1952.
Well, it's from the early days of WordPress. So anyway, so what's so you went on vacation, now you're back, so you were all caught up with what's going on. So what's going on?
Oh, there's so much going on, my goodness. I mean, fortunately, even in the middle of the rainforest, there's really good internet, which is kind of cool, you know?
We could have done a show.
Oh, that's a good point. Could have, because we have Skype on the iPhone, too. So here's what's going on. Lots of things happening, a lot of the same old things, like the same old crap out of Europe. Now, Italy is saying they may impose a short sale restriction on Bank Monte Paschi,
yeah,
which is what happened. There was this revelation last week that billions of dollars have moved out of the bank, out of deposits over the last several weeks. And they're just saying something now. And, you know, they don't know why. They're blaming, you know, collusion in, with different brokers and all that. But at the end of the day, why would anybody have money in a weak bank in the Eurozone after what just went down with Cyprus?
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
Yeah, you know what's going to happen in Spain, Portugal, and then Italy. They got to jump on it.
Right, and the EU and ECB will lie about it till the bitter end.
And what's weird is that they are shocked. They're shocked.
Shocked
by this, even though that guy from the Holland said that this is going to be par for the course. I'm surprised that all the banks are having a run right now. I'm actually stunned.
Well, they may be, but you don't know about it. I mean, the truth is they're not going to tell you that people are taking massive deposits, because that will just create more massive withdrawals.
Yeah.
So what happened was that, if you recall, we talked about how Cyprus was going to take money from all depositors initially, and then they backed up because the markets got all pissed off about it. And they said, okay, we're going to leave the 100,000 euros intact, and anything over 100,000 euros will, you know, fair game, not insured. And at first it was like 20% that they were going to have a haircut, then 30%. Now, if you look at it, 37% is the official number. The reality is it's closer to about 60 to 90%, because there's putting restrictions on the money, the freezing of the money. They have clearly capital controls where you can't take money out of the country over a certain amount and only a certain amount per day that you can withdraw. And then on top of that, they're going to give you some of your money back in the bank stock. How great is that?
I love these guys. It's hilarious.
Yeah. So they try to make it look like you're going to get, you know, only 37% haircut. But the fact is it's much greater. And on top of it, they still have not gotten through all this. The finance minister just resigned today of Cyprus, which is probably a good deal. Why does he need that aggravation?
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
But this is just going on. And the good news is the headline that I read this evening was just this evening. Asia stocks rise on waning European woes, U.S. factory data. I'm thinking, waning European woes? This was last weekend, 3 days ago. There's like nobody has a memory anymore.
Waning.
That's what they said, waning. Waning Europe woes.
I think, you know, that this thing would have the opposite effect and would make the I think the analysis is wrong, and you see this all the time. You know, stock goes up, and you explain it one way, and then another guy explains it just the opposite way. I think that this situation in Europe is going to pump up the economies of Japan and the United States because it seems that the money would be safe in an American bank or in American stocks. It seems like the last place you want your money is in Europe, and so if I've got a lot of money there, I can get it out while I can. I'd move it right over to a U.S. Institution. But it would have nothing to do with waning. It's because of.
Right, exactly. Well, what's interesting, though, is that you're finding that the U.S. dollar has been rising on a regular basis. I mean, I think there was maybe one or two days in the last few weeks that it, you know, kind of made a move down. But it's been moving up, even in the face of what usually would have been a risk-on trade. You would have the dollar going down. Now we're seeing things like the dollar goes up and oil continues to go up. It's like, you know, that's not really supposed to happen unless it's really a supply-demand issue. We saw gold fall off a cliff today, down $25. Silver's in a bear market, down 20% from its high. Mm. Now this calls for a gold crash, which we'll talk about. I have it on my list here to talk about. Mm. And then the big deal today, you know, yesterday was a down day in the markets because we saw manufacturing, the ISM number come out. It was a 51.4, and expectations were for like a 54. That's a pretty big spread when a lot of people are expecting things to just be rosy and everything is great, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the markets, you know, head down yesterday, then they move up a little bit because everybody's buying the dips, and then it closes down at the end of the day. Okay. Today we see factory orders at 3%, matching expectations, and one of the better readings that we've seen for a while. But factory orders, when you put on the big scale of things, compared to the overall manufacturing data, is not a major number that you really kind of can put a big weighting on.
Mm-hmm.
But meanwhile, markets fly up today during the early part of the day and, you know, back off a little bit towards the end. But, you know, it's kind of a crazy market that we have right now. It's almost like the bulls got pissed off that the markets were down yesterday. You know, the markets don't have a right to be down. So they kind of came in buying like crazy today. You know, the biggest – that it's the equivalent of a stock market crash yesterday that everybody just came in to buy. Hmm. Everything's on sale because it's down, you know, 20 points.
Well, we're heading toward 15,000.
Yeah. It seems that way, marching right along. There's going to be some things happening. I mean, you can't go – you know, they say trees don't grow to the sky, right? You can't have markets just go up continually because you get – essentially you run out of buyers unless what you're saying – has some real significance that there is a lot of movement out of everywhere else, emerging markets, Europe, into the U.S. But then you have to realize that, well, if things are really bad there, many of our companies are multinational and there's going to be an effect on earnings. So it can't really just be one-sided like that for long.
Well, it would have an effect on – yeah, it would have an effect on earnings but with those big companies. Stay with small caps.
Yeah, stay with the smallest of small caps, the lousy companies. Those are probably
lousy little there. Companies. They'll do great.
So the Bank of Japan is having a meeting. You know, these guys have been talking down the yen, I mean, like it's nobody's business, right? And, you know, the new...
looking at 93.61.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Well, it's up a little bit since last week. It was at 90... I think it was 96 last week.
Yeah.
Now, what's interesting is... You know, they've been talking, this is Prime Minister Abe, I guess his name is, you know, talking about, oh, we want a 2% inflation rate. We'll do everything that we have to, everything in our powers, whatever it takes to reflate this and maybe buy foreign bonds and do this. And I mean, just, you know, unlimited amount of quantitative easing. And then he brings in the guy who's like the crazy man about quantitative easing, the top guy, the most reckless of all of them when it comes to quantitative easing, puts him in as the Bank of Japan minister and head. And all of a sudden yesterday, right before a Bank of Japan meeting where they're going to kind of do some things potentially, he comes out with a statement. He says, well, maybe I shouldn't say whatever it takes to reach the 2% inflation because who knows what the far-reaching implications are around the world.
Huh.
Like, hello? did you just go back on that and say, well, maybe that's not such a great idea? I mean, these guys just shoot off their mouth and say whatever they want.
Yeah, that's what they do.
You know, it's like a kind of a guy on a first date. You know, it's, you got to say whatever you got to say to, you know, get things going, right?
That's a theory.
anyway, we have oil prices that are, I think they're at, what, 97 and change. And we saw the last couple of days that crude oil started off down pretty good. Many commodities, copper's been falling. We've seen natural gas kind of moving around pretty rapidly. We've seen, you know, gold and all sorts of things kind of, particularly the economically sensitive, you know, commodities starting to fall, and you know, crude starts going down and moving lower, and then all of a sudden, midday, about 12:30, it just starts ramping up into the close of the pits. So, you know, tomorrow morning at 10:30, we have the DOE numbers, Department of Energy numbers coming out with inventories. API came out tonight, but nobody really looks at those as much. And that will be a movement. We'll see if there's going to be a major build or if there's going to be some kind of a major drawdown. You know, we've summer coming close, and of course, there's a lot of use of vehicles in that period of time. There may be higher transportation usage right now because economies are getting a little bit better. But we're kind of getting to a point that, you know, don't you remember that President Obama not too long ago when oil was approaching like 90-ish? He was going to release the strategic oil supply. Remember
yeah,
the whole thing?
Right. Yeah, that's always a useless process.
But what happened? Well, why not now?
I don't know.
Well, nobody's so coming up.
Ah, right. There's no election coming up, and he doesn't care.
There you go. Right. So, but no, seriously, there's kind of, we'll see what happens here, and I would suggest that people take a look at USO, which is the one-time crude oil ETF, or SCO. Which is the two-time leveraged short on crude oil. And we have a position on SCO, by the way, right now. We've been moving in and out of the last couple of weeks. But just take a look at those. Watch those at the 10 o'clock hour, 10:30, 11. Usually you see a big reaction at 10:30, 10:32. And then you start seeing whatever way it's going to actually move, you know, because people cover and change up what they're doing. It's going to start moving in that direction if there is a significant amount of either build or drawdown in the numbers. But, you know, nothing just basic.
I don't know. That whole scene looks like dead money to me. It just keeps bouncing. Well, I guess it could be useful if you can trade between 90 and 100 or 90 and 97, right. Whatever it is.
Right. But again, you know, we're going to get back to this, and I'm not going to dwell on this, but the whole point of $97 oil and the economy where it is, you know, growing at, you know, 0.4, which is the latest reading, and unemployment still at 7.5. We'll see more unemployment at the end of the week. Is, you know, it's kind of a – I don't see how we are really sporting this kind of price on oil, and you may see some significant move. I mean, it's just like what happened with gold. I mean, you know, there's all these ETFs that buy it, and you know, when they start selling it, all of a sudden you start getting a little bit weird because now all of a sudden the ETFs, for example, the gold ETF holds bullion, right? Huge amounts, the third largest holder of gold bullion in the world. Behind Bank, I believe it's Bank of Germany and United States. At least they say that's what's in Fort Knox, right?
Yeah. Well, it's up for grabs.
Right. So now what happens if all of a sudden there's a lot of selling that goes on, gold starts dropping, and you have this massive amount of gold that is in storage for the ETF. They have to start selling the gold out, right?
I would think, yeah.
That kind of floods the market in a really obscene
worse.
Way. Right? I mean, it's not normal.
Right. Well, you're going long with your ETF, though, right?
No, which one?
The gold one.
No, I'm saying, well, you go either way, I'm saying. You can go either way with that, right? You can buy it long, buy it short. But in theory, most people are, you know, you're buying it long because that's how you have to back it with the gold. So the holders of it that own it own the, you know, physically backed gold. Mm. So now all of a sudden they are selling this, and let's just say this happens. You know, gold really starts moving down, predictions of 1,300, whatever the numbers are. Gold starts moving down, and the fund has to release the gold, right? They have to sell some of that off. Well, how do they go about doing that? Well, on the open market, or they sell it to other countries. I mean, it has to move somewhere. Well, what if not many people want to buy it at this point? I mean, obviously there's always a buyer and a seller, and that's what the price is based on. But my concern has always been about the massive amount of physically backed commodity inside of an ETF. What happens if and when that really starts rolling over, and it kind of feeds on itself and has to flood more and more onto the markets. That's a scary proposition.
It's a very interesting, it's very interesting, the whole idea. And it could just be a steamroller.
Yeah.
You know, on a downhill slope. Whoa, right. Can't stop it.
Exactly. So we're going to see what happens with that. So I would keep an eye on GLD and SLV. These are stocks that, you know, in a way, if there has been the discussion by Bank of Japan and U.S. and everywhere else that's putting in money into their system, lowering interest rates, even though there's not inflation right now, you would think that gold would be holding up okay, even though if economies are getting a little bit better. It should hold up okay. You know, it's an inflation hedge. It's a core part of a lot of portfolios, but it's just not. It's really looking ugly. Mm-hmm. So
might be a good short for our fake portfolio.
Yep. Which is, we could short GLD, which is a single. There's also a couple of I think there's a QLD, I believe it is, which is a double. But yeah, you could actually look at GLD. Now here's something I want to. This is something I want your thoughts on, because you know, in the it smells fishy department. So yesterday, on Monday, at about 3 p.m., all of a sudden HMO stocks and some Medicare related stocks started moving. Humana started moving big time, HUM. Now, I gave you a chart there. I don't know if you see the attachment. And I actually put this on the DH Unplugged website, which everybody needs to go to see the design that Nick the Rat did. So take a look at that chart. And notice that that's a two-day chart. It's hour by hour. Do you notice that at the 3 o'clock time frame, the big jump in volume and the big price move?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, after the close, there was some discussion that there would be some kind of a decision on the Medicare reimbursement rates. Now, there was about a 2% cut that was going to happen, and there was going to be some doctors' reimbursements that were cut, and this whole situation where doctors are supposed to be, for years now, get a reduction in their payment reimbursements from Medicare and all that through these plans. Well, stock jumps 8%. Okay. Fast forward to about, 4:30, something like that, 4:15, 4:30. And miracle of miracles, the 2% cut was retracted, and they're actually going to give them a 3% increase.
Eh.
And Humana goes up another 8% after hours. And they're most affected by this, but there's plenty of other stocks, whether it's Aetna, whether it's WellPoint, whether it's, you kind of go down United Healthcare. There's a bunch of stocks that have the same kind of situation, although Humana is a much bigger player in this area. So the question is, was it just luck that all these people happened to...
Oh, they're just lucky people.
Yeah. Is that what happened? 3 o'clock.
Yeah. And the announcement was at what time? 4?
4:30.
So an hour and a half leeway. So somebody leaked the announcement to insiders, and now these people should all be arrested. I mean, if Martha Stewart had to go to jail for just fibbing to some agent, it looks like to me should be hundreds of people being lined up to go to jail.
But nobody will go to jail, let's face it, because they're softies. Now, maybe they'll find somebody that did some option play and make who knows if it was one of the Congress people.
Oh, yeah, they can do it legally, actually. They could have put the word around the whole Congress, and then they could have all gotten in with options, probably. That's the way to do it. That's how people go to Congress. And then when they come out, they're millionaires, multimillionaires, just from getting 65 or 80,000, whatever they get paid a year of 120. I can't remember what
the number is. But wasn't there supposed to be a rule about insider trading on information that they all signed?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, I think it was some sort of agreement, but they didn't. As far as I know, they can still do this.
You know what? It's a better word than agreement, because agreement still has a little bit of requirement to it. The word they use all the time in Congress and around the world that gives you no information is a framework.
Framework.
It's a framework.
Yeah, framework. It means nothing.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds like it's something. Like they really did something. Like, we're in process. Yeah, we're in process. Yeah, yeah. That means that the work is kind of in my mind somehow. So, but anyway, I thought it was kind of
fishy.
A little bit fishy. Yep. Yeah. And then Reed Hastings, you remember that the guy from Netflix?
Yeah.
Do you remember he posted a comment on his Facebook page about how Netflix got all these subscribers and the stock went bonkers? I guess it was about a year ago or so.
Yeah, we talked about it quite a bit.
Right. Well, the SEC, the nice guys that they are, said, hey, that's okay. No charges. Came out with an announcement today.
Oh, well, that's good for him.
So now the question is, what does that open up for the whole idea of social networking and information?
It's going to be a nightmare.
Nightmare. Absolute nightmare.
That means you're going to see pump and dump everywhere.
Yeah, more than you see now.
Right, which is a lot.
Right. And then who knows what kind of – because there really is no – I mean, there's regulation, but you never hear of anybody being sanctioned or anything significant.
I got to go to that site. You have one of your friends has a site that spots pump and dumps and tries to alert people early, because if you get in early on a pump and dump, you can make some serious money. Yeah.
Right. It's a beautiful thing.
And then boop, the rug.
And then dump it, yeah.
And the rug is pulled out. You better be out.
Right.
So exactly. It's very short. You got to really – you have to – this is not what I'd call for long-term investors.
No, less than a day usually.
Yeah, you have to be in on the same day.
So Netflix, just to let you know, in the game that we play, I am short, you're long. It's reaching and very close to an important drop-off point. Now, you got a couple of points of support here, but the 176 level is what I always targeted. And you got some, again, support by moving average. I think the 50-day is right around here. And you got some volume support here, but it kind of dipped pretty well today after Jim Cramer was just absolutely thrilled with the company yesterday.
Yeah. Well, here we go.
And I gave you a chart there.
He's a 50-50 guy. I mean, he just if you look at his picks, it's like somebody that did a site on Booyah Boy, I think they call it, .com or something like that, and they track all his predictions, and he's just like you might as well throw a dart.
Yeah, I mean,
he's got a convincing sales pitch.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, he's big on, like, Salesforce. You know, he just loves them. And he's got his companies he loves. Don't forget, many of those are inside of his portfolio.
Right.
His charitable trust. So, you know, that's a great thing. Can you imagine if you had the opportunity to bring CEOs on and just, you know, say how great they are for stocks that you owned?
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Another
what a great gimmick.
What a great.
How is that even legal?
I have no idea. I was going to say that's another fishy, you know, in the fishy department. I really don't understand how that's legal. Yeah. I mean, he's supposedly not making profits on it. He's supposedly not.
It's a charitable trust.
A charitable trust, and he's, you know, releasing the information about it. But still, I mean, if it's a charitable trust, isn't that for his benefits? I don't know. This is odd. It's odd. That's all I'm saying. Okay, a couple things. Just on the topic of commodities for a second. I don't know if you noticed, and whether you care or not, actually, or anybody cares about this, but. We saw a massive move on corn, soybeans, and wheat the last couple of days. There was a crop report out. And corn, which, what was it, about $9 a bushel not too long ago. Remember it was through the roof?
Yeah.
It came down to like $6.50.
Yeah.
And this prediction is down to $4.50. Soybeans got hit too, wheat, because it was a better-than-expected crop report. More plantings, huge planting of corn. You know, you have a drought for a couple of years, and the farmers see a little bit of a potential for, you know, a good year, well, they just plant everything they can. So they're seeing that there's a gigantic crop that may be coming up if the weather holds and blah, blah, blah. But big move. As a matter of fact, so big, there's limits on the commodities markets, how much something can fall.
Right.
Well,
it's called the minimum, the maximum or something. Yeah, there's a name for it.
Yeah, they call it the limit. You know,
the limit. Yeah, it's just the limit.
Limited out. So what's interesting is that I think that wheat was limited yesterday. Corn got close, but they had to expand the corn limit, which is possible to do. I'm not sure why you have a limit if you could expand it. But they expanded it, and it got to 60 cents, and it, which is 10% essentially, or 8%. And I think it closed it down 57 cents yesterday.
Huh.
It's kind of an ugly-looking chart. I mean, just this big whoosh, whoosh. Now, I want to ask you something. Talk to me a little bit about Bitcoin.
What about it?
Well, a listener wrote in, and I read some articles recently about the amount of Bitcoin, quote-unquote Bitcoin, in circulation.
Yeah.
And you know, there was kind of some noise made about this some time ago about, hey, this is potentially a currency. It could be illegal. And
yeah.
Can you start at the beginning and tell us what is Bitcoin? And well,
no,
for those of us,
well, the beginning is shady because the guy who supposedly invented the idea, no one's ever seen him, and a lot of people think it's Max Keiser because he knows how to do exchanges. He's put exchanges together before, and this is and Keiser's a huge booster of Bitcoin, thinking it's going to change the way we do business in the world, but it's a worthless product. I mean, it has no value in any sense of what value is. It's purely a virtual, imagined product that you can mine by running some algorithms and getting a number that would be a Bitcoin number. It's almost like getting prime numbers to get these numbers by calculation. And they are just traded on the open market, on the open Bitcoin market. They're probably going to get regulated or something because there's something fishy about the whole thing. And people are really – all the tech community is really jacked up about this because they think it's cool and it will end the Fed. So these guys think it's got a, you know, it's a, it has all these benefits as a, as a, as a, something that exists.
If it, I don't
if
get
people
it,
would only take, if people would only accept it as currency, but nobody does except a very few people, like a, you know, some guys who distribute marijuana. And the worst part about it is if you buy something like marijuana with a Bitcoin, the Bitcoin by its nature tracks everything you do. I mean, the Bitcoin tells you where it's been,
right?
And so now the feds know that you're a dope buyer from online dope sales. So,
but how do you earn? I mean, is there a real earning a Bitcoin for work, or is it just come kind of? Is it because you go to certain sites and you get Bitcoin points or something? Or what's the deal?
No. There's, like I said, it's a, you can mine a Bitcoin, which is it's a very convoluted process. You have to read about it, and I don't even know as much as I could because I think it's so dumb. And I get.
What do you mean mine it? I mean, you know, mining in the old days was you dig something up and it was worth value.
What are you doing? You're digging something up. You're digging up a number, a code.
You're digging up a number?
Yes.
That's stupid.
Hello.
I mean, who's controls the numbers?
The algorithm or that identifies a Bitcoin, I guess, is what does it.
So yeah. Then.
So but, I have a Bitcoin.
Oh, this is stupid.
Yeah, no, it's very – it's – you know, you argue with people about this who think it's such a great idea because the Bitcoin – in fact, Max Keiser says that the Bitcoins will be worth $100,000 to $1 million each in no time.
But that means there would have to be limited supply and there has to be something of value. And you're telling me that somehow this – an algorithm of some sort somehow gets a number somehow and that's worth something.
Yeah. To the community of Bitcoin traders.
And how do you have to be like, do you have to work the algorithm somehow to do, I mean, do you have to be like, or is it just a luck of the draw?
No. You have to, it's a convoluted process, but you have to, and it takes forever. You have to follow a certain procedure, as far as I know, to get to mine a Bitcoin. And you have to calculate, you have to do a lot of grinding calculations. It could take a year.
And where, at the end of the day, what is the utility of grinding out these calculations?
You end up with a Bitcoin.
So you go through this process, which is like a puzzle.
Right. By the way, there's only a limited number. I think there's only a limited number ever Bitcoins that can be mined. And it's a finite number. And it's not, we're not too far away from it. So there's only a few coming. And then after that, there won't be any more new Bitcoins. And then the other ones would be divided up. So you'll have a half a Bitcoin and a quarter of a Bitcoin or a tenth of a Bitcoin, and that'll be worth like $100. Or let's say a tenth of a Bitcoin will be worth $100. And then you can use that to supposedly buy goods and services, but the number of people that accept Bitcoin for goods and services seem to be hookers, Bitcoin hookers, and the drug site, and very few other things. There are a few, but it's like crazy.
Just to sum this all up. Somebody came up with this idea and did this weird thing to hide these Bitcoins somehow in a very deep, dark recesses of computerisms. And if you find them somehow because you
– Well, you mine them. You don't find them. You mine them.
But again –
And by the way, I will get notes because I'm sure that what I'm saying is kind of generalized to such an extreme that some one of the tech geeks out there that is into Bitcoins because they see it as the future for some reason, and that part I don't understand at all. They don't see the silliness of it, but they're true believers, and they will send me an email just telling me what an idiot I am because I don't know anything about Bitcoins and I should retire. That kind of note I'll get at least five of those.
Okay, well, here's what then the challenge is. Instead of turning the anger issue, you know, on John for his ineptness on Bitcoin, if it is that, why don't somebody send us a rather short, not one of those
short but detailed.
Yeah, short but detailed note on Bitcoin, and we'll kind of review it and then talk about it if you know in a different light. But a few people can, if you don't mind, if you like it, if you don't like it, if you had good experience, bad experience, because I think this is something that I just want to understand a little bit more, because what I'm understanding now is silly. So maybe it is a little bit more in depth than that, because unless I guess maybe, you know, if we want to get, you know, have a party and invite some hookers and get some weed, you know?
Yeah, that's about
that's
the main thing.
All right, so right in your neck of the woods, what's going on with the city of Stockton?
Yeah, Stockton. They decided to follow suit. I mean, Vallejo is the first one who did it, and this was some years back. And so Stockton is now going bankrupt, Chapter 9. And it looks as – and this is the biggest town. It's got 300,000 people, so it's going to be a big deal. And they are essentially going to pay their keep their retirement benefits and screw the bondholders, which is a – to me, seems like the worst kind of precedent any municipality would ever want to pull, because they always get cheap money with those muni bonds, tax-free many times. And now if they're going to start screwing the bondholders, which is the last people you should screw, they're going to find that very difficult to ever refinance.
This is precedent that was set in the auto bailout, where the bondholders can get screwed, and everybody looks the other direction after a little while. You know, at first everybody's in shock, oh my gosh. But our memory seems to be so we have this really extraordinarily short memory when it comes to investing. You know, listen, all the things that went down that were a big cause of the financial meltdown, right? So we knew that there was a whole issue with the housing market. Okay, fine. Put that aside, though. But you also had banks allowing for zero down mortgages or maybe no income check mortgages. How about the securitization of mortgages? Or the other one that was really a big issue was synthetic CDOs, you know, synthetic collateralized debt instruments that was, you know, talk about like a Bitcoin, you know, kind of a synthetic deal on a synthetic deal.
Right.
That was, you know, it's happening all over again.
It's yeah, well, right that's now. Because it's like nothing, it didn't cut, it's almost like it being in a minefield, and instead of just backing your way out and going someplace else, you just want to sink the ship or blow yourself up or whatever, because you're it just seems to me as not enough damage was done in
it's because you have a free life. You have a free life.
Yeah, it's like a video game, because the government right. came in there and said, don't worry about it. And they threw a bunch of money at the problem, and the guys just took the money home, and they didn't really help anything, didn't improve anything, nothing really changed. They added some new laws that are, you know, don't do anything either. And the bankers are still doing their own thing, and they, you know, doing. I mean, the Bank of America is as bad as ever, and so apparently, what had to have happened was a complete collapse, a massive collapse of the economy, which could have happened if they didn't bail everyone out. But and it probably would have rebounded by now, and we have a normal economy again. But no, we're teetering on the edge, and so okay, let's see what happens. I think we're going to have a little bull market this year. It's going to, you know, complete insanity, and we'll see what happens after when October rolls around.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I always say that, you know, a forest needs a fire every once in a while, even though it's really awful, because you got to clear out the excess, and you got to kind of make sure that, you know, you have those trees that were shading everything and killing everything kind of stop, and then the saplings grow up, it'd be strong again, and you know, that's what was prevented. You know, so now we have all these crappy banks in Europe that are hanging out by a string, and they're just sucking the life out of the sovereignties, right? We have the U.S. that seems to be on perpetual money requirements right now, $85 billion plus per month from the Fed, who owns just an incredible amount of our debt at this point, and is one of the biggest buyers of our government's debt at this point. And, you know, it's like the thought of not having any kind of Fed involvement is just, you know, freaks out the market. But we'll see if we can actually, you know, do it without the morphine drip, I guess, eventually. But then we also have, you know, some things that are kind of good. One of the big reasons that we're seeing a lot of stock buying these days is because companies have instituted stock buyback programs. And how'd they do that? Well, they borrowed money really cheap. Really cheap.
Yeah, no, now's the time to borrow money if you can get it. I mean, I can't get a refi because of whatever reason, because my banks around here, they're not loaning money to anybody because it's like they can't make enough on the interest. So they just assume, you know, just kind of cycle it through some little money-making schemes they have that just gives them free money. And, yeah, I know. But if you're a corporation that can get money, yeah, you'd be crazy.
They get money very easily, and they issue it at lower rates. And what they do is they pump up the dividend on their stock. They do stock buybacks to increase their earnings. And the end of the day, it's a freebie for them. Yeah. But what they are doing, is really leveraging themselves. Right, they have more of their own stock inside the company, and they have bonds outstanding, okay, at a low interest rate, albeit. But now they have a higher level of requirement for debt payment, and on top of it, more of their own stock. So now they just concentrated their position in their own company, which may be good or bad, right, dependent.
It's good if you're at the bottom.
Yeah, good at the bottom, or if it just goes up forever. So,
but if you're not at the bottom or you're at the top and the thing collapses, you're who gets screwed the most.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, which is, I think, is a possibility.
Have you been tracking this SAC, Steve Cohen investigation, the insider trading deal?
No. What about it?
So this is a majorly well-respected hedge fund manager, Steve Cohen. And, you know, he's a bit of a pretty legendary kind of guy. And he's got all of a sudden major problems. One of the problems is that he's got hit with a $600 million insider trading fine. The biggest one, I think, in history. Well, his firm did. And a couple of the guys around him, a guy named Michael Steinberg, I believe it is, recently is being investigated. And they're getting kind of closer and closer to possibly, you know, some higher-ups. What's interesting, though, is if you think about this, all the insider trading that we've been hearing about and the deals, this is kind of how the hedge funds really made their money over the last, you know, over years ago. They had a lot, a leg up on the competition by utilizing all this knowledge that nobody else had, because now they're kind of lagging, most of them, because I guess they're not getting the information ahead of anybody,
I guess.
Yeah.
No, I haven't been. I should catch up to that.
Yeah, interesting story going on. So Apple comes out with an announcement today, and the stock was up almost, I guess, 2%. And then this announcement came at 1:30, and that was it for the stock for the rest of the day. Kind of went down the whole day. They're coming to, they had an announcement that they're beginning production of a refreshed iPhone. First of all, I have no idea what that means. A refreshed iPhone, similar in shape and size to its current one that they put out. Is that like a 5S? Is that going to be a 5S, I guess? Maybe?
Well, you know, I'm not sure what they meant by refreshed, because it could be like a slipstream upgrade called a refresh. So it's just essentially the same phone with, I mean, in other words, you have whatever you have now, say it's a 5. And if refresh version comes out, it's the same exact phone to you, but the innards are different, let's say. It's got maybe some more things implemented that are just minor. So they don't want to call it a new model. They want to call it refreshed.
Nobody looks at the innards. I mean, if you change out something here or there, nobody cares, right?
No, the Apple people, yeah, they care about everything. The two extra decibels on the microphone is in this new one. And they've moved, I see, the connector a quarter inch to the left.
Yep. Well, I heard they are looking at a phone that is going to be totally, almost a one-piece, no-button phone. So I don't know how that works.
Well, they better do something about that button.
It's big.
No, it's not as big. It's flawed. My son has an iPhone 4, and the button goes out after about a year. He's got it on a two-year contract. And the button doesn't work. And then apparently he's done a lot of research on the internet. The button doesn't work on half of these iPhones after they get old. But most of the iPhone users are just a bunch of addicts, and they keep trading the phone in every year, so they don't have this problem. But apparently a lot of people have the problem, and they won't do anything about it.
Yeah. And speaking about iPhones, by the way, on my Costa Rica trip, all my pictures, I brought a camera with me, a decent camera. Every one of my pictures was iPhone.
Yeah, looks it.
I didn't pull. I know well. I mean, but on an iPhone or on a small device, it's great.
Yeah, it's okay. It's a little blurry, a little crummy looking, but yeah, it's fine.
Okay, moving along.
And you brought a good camera with you. That's nice. That's good. You bring a good camera with you and you use the iPhone for all your...
Well, I was between rafting and canyoning. I was not thinking about, you know, I was more concerned about my body staying intact.
Okay. Looks like you had a lot of fun, by the way. Your wife is starting to look very old. You have a picture of her in there with...
No, I don't. Do I? She wasn't there.
Oh, there was some woman. It was the cook. Never mind.
Yeah. Oh, aha. I hear. Oh, man. They had that place had was it called? You know, the pork dish with the back fat on the pork. It was I forgot. I ate termites on the trip, by the way.
Yum.
Yeah, good stuff. They call it the and I met a coral snake and a something called a blue jean dart frog.
I love that frog. You just sent a picture of that thing's gorgeous. Red body with the blue legs.
Yeah.
That's the one thing if I saw that thing, that's one thing I would say to myself, I am not eating this thing ever.
Definitely. Yeah, exactly. Now something interesting happened on that little trek I did. At the end of the trek, you know, we're looking at all the different fauna and the animals and all. And the guy says to me, he says, you know, do you know what the most important – I swear to God this is true. He says, do you know what the most important export of Costa Rica is? I'm thinking, what's my answer, right? So my pineapple? right? I mean, what's – you know, whatever, okay? He says, no. Semiconductor chips.
Oh, they have a couple of plants.
We have a company here in our country called Intel.
No.
That is a very important company around the world. I said, Intel.
I've heard of them, huh?
Did they start? Are they a Costa Rica company? Oh yes, they're a Costa Rica company. We're very proud of them. I'm like, what? What? Seriously, I'm not kidding about this. So, anyway, I thought that was really interesting.
That is funny. That's a little myopic.
And I met two other people from Costa Rica who one of them works for Kimberly Clark and one works for, I think it was Coca-Cola. I don't know. But it was interesting that all these people work for American companies, you know?
Costa Rica might as well be one of our states.
Yeah. It's only a 3-hour flight from here.
Yeah, it's got a lot of retirement villages and
no army.
A lot of people are there. You don't need an army. You got us.
Yeah, true.
So it's some sort of a, I don't know. I haven't been there.
Yeah, anyway, later this week we have a few things coming up that's important. We have the jobs data on Friday, the NFP payrolls report, which supposedly about 200,000 adds. We've been surprised at the upside recently. On this number, 7.7% unemployment rate is the expectation. Tomorrow morning, we have the ADP payrolls number come out, which is a kind of a it's been a bit of a preview for the Friday number. And there's a lot of different companies that do this, but ADP, because they count payroll, right? You know, the payroll company. It's an interesting thing to look at for private payrolls to see what the growth has been. And they've been a little bit higher than the actual report that we see on the Fridays, the official government report. But, you know, they've been kind of trending along pretty well. So we look at what happens on Wednesday morning to kind of get a read. And then you see a lot of adjustments being made by these major companies about, you know, what Friday's number is going to be. Mm. So they can get as close as they can to this. But there's a lot – I think there's a lot of optimism going into this number. Do you feel that?
I personally don't feel it, but everyone tells me that everyone's jacked up. In fact, I just had a conversation with my wife about this, and she was saying that everyone that she talks to is they're all optimistic. She's not.
But, and by the way, I saw your wife recently. She looked horrible.
No, that was the cook.
Oh, that was the cook. Sorry. Yeah.
I wonder if you realize you sent a picture of you with some woman that looked
that was a great little restaurant. Yeah. So now
it looks like it was actually.
Yeah. So there, I believe from what I've been reading in the business rags and, you know, what I've been seeing from the analysts and the overall market kind of, you know, the sentiment, there is a great belief that, number one, the economy is coming back strong. First of all, it's doing fine. It's kind of muddling along. It's doing its thing. Nothing is really turning down terribly. Nothing's great either. I mean, you know, you had good numbers here, bad numbers there. We had a horrible consumer confidence number beginning of last week, and miraculously at the end of the week, the University of Michigan went from a 71 or 72 first read to the third revision to like 78. Mm. I don't know what happened in between. But, you know, we saw, you know, kind of a consumer confidence on both sides, depending on who did the study. And there's kind of this belief, I think, that that there's a lot of hiring going on. Construction is back. I have heard down here that there is a great demand for construction workers that it can't be met. And there is a lot of movement in the housing market down here.
Yeah, that's the same thing in the Bay Area. There's a lot of I mean, it's not a, the area that I'm in is not a new housing construction area because it's all filled, but it's been going on elsewhere in the peripheral, and the prices around here have gone up substantially.
Right.
And now, especially in the Palo Alto area.
If all we had all these foreclosures like over the last few years, right?
Yeah, this is my wife brought this up too. She says, "What do you think the banks are still holding on to a bunch of properties and they're keeping, you know, the market tight because the market's going up and they're not throwing these properties on the market. They're just sitting on them." Which I, by the way, believe they should be paying taxes. They got some they got some deal with the government that they don't have to pay taxes on these foreclosed homes. When somebody should, there's a property on a – someone owns it, and they should be paying property taxes. So these banks should be paying money on this stuff.
Through the city, the municipality.
Well, the municipality, the state.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, property taxes.
What is – if that's the case, okay, and at the same time, builders have been really picking up on new construction, right?
Yeah.
What – there's kind of a – an interesting discussion here. What if they release those foreclosures, or maybe they are releasing them? Where is all this demand for new houses all of a sudden versus, I mean, where are all these new people coming from? I mean, a lot of people are doing rentals these days, the young people especially.
Yeah.
They want to be mobile.
They're kind of screwed. Well, they also don't know any better.
Okay. But still, all these new houses are being built, right? All, you know, or I should say all, but they're definitely increasing in the demand for that. And existing home sales were okay last week, nothing terrific, but okay. And are just people coming out of the woodwork saying, okay, it's time to buy a house now? Or the people that foreclosed decide I'll go back in to buy a house again?
I don't really know who these people are, but I assume that there's I think the first assertion you made, which is they're getting back into the market after having been kicked out of it, is probably more likely.
And I think what you said about the banks doing holdback on foreclosures, you know, the big thing is, oh, mortgage delinquencies are down and the foreclosure market, you know, the least foreclosures in years. Well, of course there is. You know, you can't just – if there's a certain amount of foreclosures and you're not giving loans out, no matter what happens, I don't care what happens, your foreclosure rate is going to go down over time, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so everybody's making a big deal about foreclosures, you know, at a low and, you know, over the last couple of years. Well, of course that's the case. Mortgage delinquencies, credit card delinquencies. Well, if you only cherry pick your people and you don't issue as many cards and you write off tons of bad debt, your credit card delinquencies go down.
Right.
I mean, you know, these are all manipulative, and I don't mean this in a negative sense.
Yeah, you do mean it in a negative sense, and you always look for these things. You're like one of the better people at spotting them and then shaking your finger.
No, bad boys. So next week also starts earnings season. Oh, let me just finish this one point. So I think there's a lot of optimism going into Friday's number. There has been a great amount of retail money coming to the market. We could see that mutual funds and ETFs have pretty substantial inflows lately into the equities. You know, starting the beginning of this year, I think people finally said, okay, fine, I'll get in. You know, what's going to happen at this point? Fed's there. And I think that optimism is there. I think you have a great deal of retail in there. The question is going to be, you know, how the reaction to the number on Friday, which is usually a pretty important level, at least from an investor standpoint.
I think it's going to be all positive. I wouldn't be surprised if this market hit 15,000 in the next 2 weeks.
Nice. Love it. Why not? Party. It's okay.
I mean, the market has an occasion to go up 500 points. You know, all at once, does it once in a while. It could do it any moment. It's only a certain percentage. It's not that big of a run.
Again, when that happens, none of the Fed people come out there and say, hey, guys, slow down, right? I'm just checking that again. They don't say, hey, stop buying maybe, you know, calm down.
No, they're not going to do anything like
that. They don't lock down the markets.
No.
No, they don't come out and, you know, in parade and say, you know, you guys are getting ahead of yourself, really getting a little bit, you know, with valuations aren't there. No. All right. Just checking. So next week starts earnings season. I'm pretty excited about earnings season, actually, because I'm really curious about how margins are going to be impacted with the hiring. I think it's interesting. If you think about it, companies did a great job of cutting their expenses by cutting the human out of the equation, right?
Yeah, well, the dead wood.
Yeah. And now what happens is they start hiring again. Okay. Big expense. You know, you got benefits and all this other stuff. And at the same time, we noticed that revenues really aren't increasing. As a matter of fact, they've been pretty flat. And on top of that, the dollar has been rising dramatically. And we'll talk about the other things like Europe and all that, but put that aside. So now you have earnings expectations. And the question is going to be, are we going to see a margin squeeze? Maybe nothing substantial, but at least a drop in the margin, because now you have higher expenses at the same revenue, and you have basically, for the most part, the same price of input, depending on what company you are and what you do, but the same input costs. I think it's going to be a really interesting discussion to see. I mean, material companies already have been – it's fascinating. The markets are doing really well, and everybody's really excited about the market, you know, the economy, but yet – the materials have been lagging. Industrials have been lagging. The best has been like healthcare and utilities and kind of the defensive sector.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit, you know, ass backwards.
It is. All right. Well, let's take a look at the our fake portfolio.
And by the way, a couple of things. First of all, I'm going to try to embed this in the site. I'm going to get them to embed this inside the site.
Should be doable.
Page.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
so it'll be always real time.
Yeah. Exactly. And the second thing is that just to mention, there's a game that we play. What we do is we come up with some ideas that may be interesting to invest in from a, you know, theoretical standpoint.
From a game perspective.
Right. We have a lot of cojones in this because it's not real money.
Right. So we're buying an infinite amount of this, and it doesn't affect the price, curiously.
And my hope is if we do a really good job, somehow we're going to get a Bitcoin out of it. That's my hope.
It could happen.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. This is maybe what it's all about. So, the securities that we talk about may be owned or held by Horowitz Company, John Dvorak, Andrew Horowitz, or, you know, anybody. But the point is that you have to seek professional advice before you invest, and we're not recommending buying or selling any of these securities. Okay, my spiel is done.
Okay, so we have a lot of kicked off. I should have been kicked off on my Walmart short, which was a mistake.
Amazing.
And I'm still long Netflix. I'm only down 5% on that. I think I can weather the storm here. And
that only happened the last couple of days.
Yeah, we'll see what happens there. Everything else is in the green.
Yeah, everything else
except
is
Silica
good.
Holdings, which is just very slightly in the red. But I think we're on a roll here.
Yeah, we are. We're
and
on
what's
roll.
Interesting is you actually. I don't have any shorts except for the Walmart, which I'm done. I should be done with because I'm down 10%.
It's knocked out. It's yellow.
It's done. So I don't have any shorts, and I'm going to kind of maintain that position until I see some reason to be short. And I like to be just short or long. And I don't. You're hitting some shorts, which I find to be fascinating. You've shorted Amazon. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You shorted to Cream Corn.
It's an ETF that's a corn ETF.
It's a short ETF, or you
no,
shorted
it's a long,
the short. It's
long,
a long,
yeah.
And you shorted. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then international. That's the only other one is Netflix. It's your short on, and you're up. And American International, which you're short on, but it's not doing anything. It's not performing.
You know, I got to look at the Radio Shack now that I see it, because I thought it was up a lot more than three. I thought it was up a big time, like a big chunk. Wasn't it at one point?
Yeah, it was. I think it's retreating for some reason.
Yeah, you may have to get stopped out on that. I have to look at that, actually, and see where the high was on that over the time that you owned it.
It's possible.
Silica Holdings is a very aggressive play, and I did that to try to, if you remember that, to keep up with you. You know, you were running away with Cree and with Live Nation, which is just extraordinary. Beautiful, beautiful gains. And, you know, actually, what's really interesting, if you, we haven't even talked about this. Look at McGraw-Hill. That's the S&P being sued. They were just getting absolutely obliterated.
Right. We both took that one. And, it's doing good. I know that's hilarious.
11.5%. It's amazing.
It was a contrarian decision.
It was. Now, I am going to sit tight with what I have right now.
Ah,
I have what?
I got
two, three, four, five positions. You have one, two, three, four, five, six, seven positions.
I got one more.
You do? What do you have?
ACGO.
ACGO.
Yeah.
I'm like Ed McMahon. ACGO. Okay.
What do you see when the fog lifts?
Yeah. What is that?
Pacific. It's AGCO. It's a farm and construction machinery company. And insider buying. Heavy insider buying.
Now, are they like a let me just write this, ACGO. I want to look this up. Are they like a Deere? Or Titan Industries?
No, more. I think it's more like Titan than Deere. And I think it's most, and it's I think it's a lot of the – let's take a look. Yep. It's a lot of this equipment that's specialized.
Challenger, Fendt, Massey Ferguson, Valtra tractors.
Ah, that's
it.
Massey Ferguson. So, yeah, it's a Massey Ferguson is what it really is.
Massey Ferguson. These are the kind of things that we want to ride on.
Yes. All kids want to ride on a Massey Ferguson.
Not only that. Wow, they have mobile apps. Look at this right on the top. I guess it's Agriculture Command. It's Ag Command. AGCO launches the mobile app for professional farmers. See AGCO in action.
I think they do some of the some of those automated systems, you know, that are a big deal that were going to be ruined by certain kinds of technologies because they use GPS and then the machines go around and do all the work with nobody in the tractor.
Well, they got combine harvesters. Oh, look at that thing. Wow. I want it's like a giant Pac-Man for the farm. Something for hay and forage. What is this? Oh, little tractors for taking stuff. They have seeding and tillage. What do they got there? Oh, those are big. That's a big one. That's a big machine.
Seeding and tillage.
Seriously, it's a big machine. Ground care. What do they got there?
Whatever the case, I'm on it because of the insider buying, not because of that they own all these different companies.
Well,
it is. It is kind of a this. It is kind of a. One of those companies that buys up all its competition, which is distressing in some ways.
See
but
who the competition exactly directly is? It's got to be Deere is one of them. There's no question about that.
Deere is definitely Deere.
I gotta find out who else is there. Let's see if I have it. Here we go. No, is that here? Here we go. Deere, Lindsay, which is an interesting company. Alamo, Kubota. That's why we were actually short. We were short Caterpillar till yesterday. Because remember the thesis on Caterpillar?
Mm-hmm.
And we made nice money on it. It was great. We did it for Trigger Point Research. We sent out an equity alert and made, I don't know, 5% in a couple of weeks. And cut it right at the level where we thought it was kind of like done. But what's interesting is you had a lot of drop-off today on many of these stocks because you had the big drop in wheat, corn, soybeans and all that. And they kind of follow along. But the chart on this one, let's kind of look back year-to-date here. Year-to-date, it's up 3%. It's been as low as 50. It's gone to 55, and it's kind of in between right now.
Yeah, well, so, this drop off probably from some of these reports, but it seems to me that if everyone's panicking about the, and then also Jim Rogers, who's a bear potentially. I mean, I didn't mean potentially. I mean perpetually a bear.
Yeah.
And he sees the farming situation to be dire. And he has all these thoughts
really,
on it.
Really? Because he's been really big into AGCO. Simple as no data. Really? It's AGCO. That's why. Huh? Don't forget, he's been big into the whole, going back to an agrarian economy. He's been big into that whole issue.
Yeah. Well, what he's saying is that we're not producing enough new farmers and they're incompetent and we're eating more than we're producing. And he has all these arguments that says to me that we need this sort of company may do well in the short term,
right?
But
exactly.
Again, I didn't pick it because of that. I picked it because of the insider guy, and that's that.
Yep, I hear you. Well, we got that on the list, and we'll make sure to get that updated on the open. Remember, we have a little 10% automatic stop, or if it retraces back, unless we do something different and special, and we'll always put that in. In the beginning of the discussion, I mean, I think that
we haven't done that much. We did it once. We had to buy and then a sell.
I think it was Facebook. Did we do that with Facebook?
It was something. We had a whipsaw concept. I think it was yours.
It was
I want to buy
crazy.
It for 2 days and sell it, something like that. Okay, whatever.
Yep. Well, I think it worked.
Yeah, I did actually.
Yep. All right. Well, we'll talk next week. And by the way, just to let you know once again. When we skip a week, I get all sorts of calls, really calls to my office. And they're like, what is going on?
What is wrong with you? You should be doing the show.
I can't go to the office and the drive to the office I got to deal with. And
people was holding signs?
Not yet.
All the way as you go driving in? Where's the show? Where's Horowitz?
Yeah. Right. Bring back DH. And by the way, thanks to Nick the Rat for his help with DH Unplugged. And we do appreciate all your hard work and your efforts in helping us redesign the site. And like I said, a few more things we're putting on there. But I think it's much nicer. It's clean. It's, bold. It does the job.
It's really good looking. All right. We'll talk again next Tuesday.
Okay, great. Bye-bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.